Your financial choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org or on the WDIY app. Tonight, we are talking about navigating life events. And though I am live tonight, we are just going to have a recording of the show tonight. So if you have questions, you would have to email those through yourfinancialchoices.com, yourfinancialchoices.com. If you have questions, you can send them through the website. I may not be able to check them during the show, but I will certainly reply back to you if you leave your email address, of course. So again, tonight we are talking about navigating life events, and I will remind our listeners that we do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And again, if you have questions, you can send those through yourfinancialchoices.com. So tonight, these are just really, you know, over the past several weeks, I've been trying to kind of set up the kind of like a timeline of things to pay attention to when we're thinking about, you know, our financial life. We talked about retirement accounts. We've talked about goal setting. We talked about the impact of your financial decisions as to what is your story and how every person's story is individual to them. I like to remind people of that quite often when you're taking in content, and there's so much content available to people now. You can have, you know, AI content, you can have social media content, you can have, you know, custodians of your retirement accounts or your individual accounts that give you content. The research that can be done now is endless. But you have to remember all of that is coming to you is, for the most part, general information. It has to kind of cover a broad swath of people and situations. And I cannot emphasize enough that when you're thinking about the circumstances that you're in, they are definitely unique to you. It's unique to your cash flow, your cash needs, your emotions, your timeline, your family situation. There's just so much involved, and realizing that is critical, because a decision, you know, when you get this content, you could think that this ABC applies to you, and it might not be the very best thing for you. Your situation might be D, not ABC. So even though it could give you some general information, it may not be specific. So I just thought tonight we would talk about navigating life events. And I'm literally just going to be talking off the top of my head to tell you, kind of with the years of experience I have had, some of the situations that I have seen and how it can make a difference if you pay closer attention to your own situation and not try to fit into a box of general financial advice. So, for example, when we talk about navigating life events, and it could be any category, but in general, there might be, you know, just in general, life events, marriage, divorce, death, having children, birth of a job, within that, changes in jobs, birth of a child, did I say? Change in jobs, you know, and just general financial decisions. So, for example, for the birth of a child, there would be childcare decisions, there would be education decisions, there would be health care, you know, insurance decisions, a change in job. A change in job can be a new job. It can be a promotion. You know, your circumstances might change in a promotion. The benefits that might be available to you, the fringe benefits from employment might be different to you in a promotion. What if you lose your job? What if you get offered a package versus just getting terminated or laid off? What if you're not retirement age and these things happen? What if you just generally retire, voluntary retirement? What does that look like? What do you have to pay attention to? What if you have always been a single income home and a spouse or partner gets a job and now you're a dual income home? How might that change in your circumstances? And in marriage, when we talk about getting married, what are the circumstances that we might have to pay attention to? Well, you certainly should hopefully have some understanding before you get married about how each other handles finances. And I'll talk more about that. I'm just giving a general overview right now. What do you do about asset titling if you, you know, bring two households together in marriage? What are you going to do with, who's managing what? Who's managing what investments? Who are going to be the beneficiaries? And what might happen to either those fringe benefits I just mentioned earlier in a marriage? One spouse might be able to carry the, you know, insurance and things like that. So what do you have to pay attention to there? What life events might happen just in general, day-to-day kind of financial decisions? Well, you might want to buy a house. You might want to do renovations. You have to make decisions about vacations and what does that look like? Do you want to buy a second home at some point, a vacation property? What kind of cars do you buy? When do you buy the cars? And then education. Are you paying for your education now? Are you paying for a spouse's education? What about paying for saving for children's education? So there's all kinds of life events that we face, and I'm just going to talk about some of the nuances within those. Just kind of, I'm not going to be able to cover everything, of course, tonight, but just to kind of get the blood flowing in your thinking and how you approach your own financial decisions. There are people who really engage with this, like to the 10th degree, like they love it, they're into it, they know everything about their whole financial situation. And there are people who get very stressed out about it and can't face it, don't want to talk about it. There are people who, you know, spend every penny they have and then some. And there are people who don't spend any money and just continue to accumulate and, you know, may be very happy living their lives that way, but may one day realize they, you know, haven't spent the way they might have been able to or relax about it. I give an example of someone who is a high net worth, and they said they never thought they had money, which is why they never spent money. And he didn't even realize it until I pointed it out to him. And he said, you know, Lori, I'm going to start spending money now. So taking more vacations and, you know, buying a nicer car and that kind of thing. So we will cover navigating life events as we go through the show tonight. We are not taking calls this evening, but if you have questions, you can send them through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com. We will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
For the past three decades, WDIY has sustained itself through direct contributions from listeners. Our model is simple. The people who listen to the service are the ones who support the service. As WDIY celebrates its landmark 30th anniversary, we invite you to join us as a WDIY member by making a membership gift today. This is something you could do right now to make a meaningful difference in your community. Call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or online at wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. You can also listen to podcasts of prior shows at WDIY.org under Public Affairs, or on YourFinancialChoices.com, or on many streaming services. We are talking about navigating life events tonight, so I kind of just laid the groundwork. I remember years ago, and it just hit me, I remember talking about life stages, and I put names to these stages. And one stage I called testing, then nesting, then investing, then resting, and divesting. The testing was kind of the early years where, you know, maybe you're getting kicked out of the house, you've graduated from college, you have to do the adulting thing, which my kids keep saying they don't want to do adulting. None of us do, really. even at my age, I really don't want to do adulting. But at some point, you do kind of have to go off on your own and start being responsible. And I called that kind of the testing stage, where you're going to college, you're making decisions, career decisions, you're testing that out. Testing equals, you know, college and education. But you're also testing out what you want to do. You might be testing out relationships. You might be testing out where you're going to live. You're doing a lot of testing, and it's a great, great opportunity and a great time to do that when you're young, when you can take more risks, you have a longer timeline. So when we talk about a life event, and I'll talk about birth later, but this is kind of really the first stage of life events where you have to make decisions, and that could impact you over the long term financially. If you are someone who is going to college or chooses to go to college or vocational school, who's paying for it? Are your parents paying for it? Well, that right there gives you gives you an advantage. But maybe you're paying your own way. Then you're going to have to make financial decisions. How do you pay for your college education? Are you taking out loans? Do you know how much those loans are going to cost you? You know, personally, I ended up going to school for 6 years to get a bachelor's degree because I did pay for my own college, and I had to kind of spread it out. So I would go year round, and I would take out short-term loans from the student aid office and kind of pay as I went a little bit. I did end up using a credit card for some of that education, but I did what I had to do, and it did make a difference in the long run for my, you know, future career, et cetera. So the testing stage, what career are you choosing and how are you paying for it? Because that ends up having some kind of compounding event over your life. And the compounding event could be huge student loans with a low paying job that is not going to compound the way you want. Or it could be, you know, low interest loans, paid them as you go, or your parents paid for it and you got a really great job that's going to pay a lot of money. That could have a compounding effect. So some of those early decisions, life events can make a difference for you. And you want to think those through. I know that young people hate hearing advice from older people, but if anything can get through to young people, it's save as early as you can. Save, save, save. Unfortunately, in life, you know, so much is tied to our financial decisions and our ability to have options in our future. And quite often, it's our financial stability, our financial security that gives us those options. So the sooner you can kind of master this, the better. Spending less than you make, huge difference. And knowing how much you spend can make a huge difference. I have seen this, I promise you, anybody listening, I have seen this over and over again. People who know how much money they're spending are usually the people who have money. And the people who, you know, think they have so much money and just, you know, spend, they don't think about it, usually are the ones who, you know, are depleting their funds and or, you know, putting it on credit cards. And then, again, there's a compounding negative effect on that. If you have money on credit cards, you're spending more than you can afford, and now it's costing you so much more. If you think about it in the moment, and this navigating life events could go toward any number of life events, whether it is buying a car or, you know, buying knickknacks for the house or, you know, whatever it might be, spending more than you have, it has an impact, and over time, compounding negative if you're putting, if things are costing more. So you might think you're doing a good job by, you know, checking out prices. Oh, I got this great deal. This was on sale, you know, and you brag to your friends about buying something on sale or that you got this great price. Well, if you put it on a credit card and now you're paying 29% interest because you don't pay off your credit card, that wasn't such a good deal. So I can't emphasize that enough. And you might say, well, you know, this is all I could afford. I had to put it on a credit card. Well, you know, then how can you pay for things? Maybe you need to get a second job. You know, it's not unheard of. I mean, I worked three jobs at one point. My husband worked three jobs at one point. So it's not unheard of if you want to spend and you think you need to spend and your current job isn't paying for it. Well, then maybe you need to get more work or, you know, stop spending. So life event, let's talk about that testing stage. So kind of got through that. Now nesting, what do I mean by that? And this goes to the life events as well. So the nesting stage to me is now you've graduated from college, you have those first jobs. Oh, by the way, part of the life events I said was getting a job, getting new jobs, and this could be at any time in your life as well. When you're getting a new job, you want to make sure you're comparing one job to the other, apples to apples. You put together an Excel spreadsheet, say, hey, this job's offering me $60,000. They have a 401k. They don't put any money in it. And the health care is going to cost me, you know, $700 a month. And I get, you know, 1 week of vacation. And the other job pays $60,000 a year. They pay for the bulk of the medical. You might pay $100 a month and you get 2 weeks of vacation after, you know, X number of months. And they have a match on the retirement plan 401k. Those are very different jobs. So if the position they're offering is similar to your desire of where you want to work and what you want to do, they're both $60,000 with very different benefits. So life event, new job, any job, you want to make sure that you're comparing apples to apples in your decision making. The other thing I always tell people to look for is opportunities for promotion as well, because that could make a big difference in your career too. If it's a very small company and, you know, they haven't grown in 30 years and there's only four employees, that could fit your style very well. I'm not knocking it. I like small companies. I'm not knocking it at all. But maybe you're a real go-getter and you want a lot of opportunities. Well, then maybe you need to look at a corporation. The work could be very different in those two scenarios, and you'd have to weigh that as well. So keep that in mind. But definitely look at the fringe benefits after you kind of probably get the offer. If you go in asking what the fringe benefits are right off the top, they might think, well, what are you doing for us? All you're looking for is what you're going to get out of it. So make sure you know that you can add value and participate and do well too. So that's the testing stage. Now the nesting stage, you've been working, you've had the job for a while. All of a sudden, wait, now you're adulting and you think you might want to buy a house, or maybe you want to move into a bigger apartment. Maybe you meet someone and you're thinking, where is this going to go? Hopefully, you know, maybe you're thinking there could be marriage in the works, or maybe children in the future. May or may not be that, but it could be that. Nesting stage, you're kind of trying to think, I'm settling down, I might stay here for a while. What is that going to look like? And what are some of the considerations in that scenario? So I'll talk about that when we come back from this next break. If you have questions, you need to send those through yourfinancialchoices.com, yourfinancialchoices.com. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Public media is facing a critical threat. Efforts to eliminate federally approved funding could jeopardize everything you value about WDIY. For just $1.60 per person each year, federal funding supports the services you rely on, from trusted news to community programming and diverse music. But without that funding, all programming could be at risk. The stakes are higher than ever. Visit protectmypublicmedia.org and urge Congress to protect WDIY before it's too late.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. We are talking about navigating life events and how they are all unique to you, and make sure that you understand that. Be cautious of general advice. Nesting stage. The nesting stage, as I mentioned, could be that stage where you're thinking about buying a house or getting into a relationship, or, you know, maybe having, you know, a family, children. So nesting. What is involved in that scenario as far as life events? Well, it could be marriage. And so when we're working toward marriage, when we're combining assets or incomes or households, what are some of the considerations for that? And this can happen for first-time marriages, or it could happen for second or even third marriages. Some things to think about. First of all, I've given these little tips over the years that I've been doing the show about if you're in a relationship or getting into a relationship with someone. You know, one of the biggest, I think, stressors in relationships are finances. I'm sure there's statistics and studies on that. It would be a good idea to know what your partner's outlook or approach to finances is, to make sure you're probably going to both be on the same page. I have seen where we have couples where one is a spender and one is a saver. So the one who's spending could be like out of control, and the one who's saving, you know, might be too tight on the reins, and which breeds a lot of conflict. That could be why they actually were attracted to each other, because the one who spends a lot really might not want to spend so much. So they marry someone who's going to try to, you know, rein them in. And the one who's so tight with the money might get stressed out by being so tight with the money, and they might want someone to be a little, like, loosen them up a little bit and spend a little bit. But this is where I see a lot of conflicts. You also want to be aware if someone's coming into a relationship where they might be a big spender and have a lot of credit card debt, or are not aware of how much they spend. They don't think about it. They say, oh, I'm stressed out, I don't want to think about it, I'm just going to go spend. Well, sometimes people respond to stress by spending, and it could get them into trouble. You could get into a vicious cycle of putting money on credit cards, not having enough money to pay them off, and then you know your minimum payments are barely paying the interest. So little tips is, I said, you know, maybe before you really go too far in a relationship, you go out to eat, you see what they order. Are they ordering the fancy cocktails? Are they ordering more than one? Do they order appetizers, dinner, and dessert? Who are they expecting to pay for it? You know, these are little cues or clues as to maybe someone's patterns. Do they own their car? Do they buy a brand new car? Do they lease a car? Maybe they buy a brand new car when they hardly had enough money to, you know, put the gas in the car. Do they buy used cars? Are they practical about money? What does money mean to them? What did money mean to their family? That type of thing. Okay, so have some understanding about one's emotions and habits around money. Now, as we get more serious and we think, well, these people kind of passed the test, they're pretty good, then where are we with combining assets? So when you come into a relationship, you may or may not have any assets coming in, especially if you're kind of new in, you know, coming out of college and you haven't accumulated much yet. But over time, you might. Do you have joint bank accounts? Do you keep your accounts separate? Do you pay for your bills separate? Does one pay for the utilities and somebody else pays the real estate taxes? Have conversations about what that's going to look like. I mean, I've been with my husband since I was 17, and we had like a joint checking account, I think, like right away, and we're paying expenses together. And so you kind of want to talk about what that would look like. Then as far as combining assets, let's pretend someone comes into the relationship with, you know, $200,000 in the bank or $200,000 in investments, and the other one comes into the relationship with no assets and credit card debt. Are you going to combine your assets? You may not want to. When you combine assets with spouses, and depends on what state you live in, there may be different rules, different laws. You'd have to talk to an attorney about that. I'm not an attorney and I don't give legal advice. But there are consequences to combining assets, meaning if you are in a state where they consider this marital property as soon as you combine them, if you're married X number of years and you go to split the assets, those assets that you brought into the relationship may get split, and you're like, wait a minute, wait, I came in with $200,000, she or he came in with nothing, why do I have to share that? Well, if you put it into a joint account, then it may become marital property subject to division. Now, you never want to think when you're getting married or going into a marriage that you have to think about divorce, but if you are a child of parents who've been divorced, it may be on your radar to think of these things. And that's something to talk about with any potential partner as well. You might say, listen, no offense, but I came from a broken home and there was a lot of conflict around finances. And, you know, I love you and I'm going to make sure that we take care of each other and we're going to pay attention to these things. But, you know, I do feel like I need to kind of keep some of my assets separate for whatever reason, okay? And nowadays, you can put on beneficiary designations on these accounts. So, for example, if I came into a relationship with $200,000 and my spouse came in with nothing, I might say, well, you know, I want to control that for a while. We're just new into this. And I could say, Lori Siebert, transfer on death to my spouse. And that way, if I die, I'm still married, it could transfer to my spouse. If we divorce 5 years later, it's still in my name and it's not part of the marital property. Now, appreciation may be, but the assets that I brought in typically might not be. Again, you have to consult your attorneys for state law. So that might be something to think about. You could always start with your assets separate and then have a joint account where you both now, you know, now that you're together, start making everything joint. That can work as well. But the other thing that you really want to pay attention to as well is beneficiary designation. So when we talk about life events, yes, I'm only talking about nesting right now and combining households or combining incomes or combining assets. But we also have to think long term, and as a couple and a family, you're working towards some future. And you're relying on each other for that future and counting on each other for that future and supporting each other for that future, then you also want to take care of each other in the event anything were to happen. So that comes into the divesting stage, which is divesting, meaning I don't need these assets anymore, or unbeknownst to me, you know, I pass away in some unforeseen accident, I do take care of that surviving spouse. And that could be done with beneficiary designations. As I mentioned, it could be either a transfer on death designation on an individual account or a joint account, or it could be on IRAs, Roth IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, life insurance. So you really have to pay attention to all of that. So when I talk about life events, and I've just talked to clients about this today. This is how I think. It's how I've always thought. I always think something could happen every day. And, you know, if you give yourself options, it gives your beneficiaries options as well. You want to make sure you have primary beneficiaries and contingent beneficiaries. So back to part of the nesting, make sure you understand how each of you look at finances. What are your emotions around that? Do you think you would be in agreement on what kind of home you buy? Do you buy something less than you can afford? That's another tip I often give people: buy less than you can afford. That kind of hopefully takes care of if you're a dual income family and one loses their income, then you're not so desperate because you bought less than you can afford, whether it's a home, a car, you know, whatever it might be. Folks, we're at the halfway point. If you have questions, they can be emailed through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
If you have questions, they could be submitted through yourfinancialchoices.com. Tonight, we are talking about navigating life events and kind of putting them in the framework of these life stages I've talked about in the past, the testing, nesting, investing, resting, and divesting. So part of the nesting stage also is getting married, but it could also be having children. And you also have the choice of not having children, and that could be part of that nesting as well. To have a child costs a lot of money over time. So that is something that you should realize and recognize as you go into any partnership, that if your decision is to have children, your life choices could be a tiny bit more limited maybe than someone who doesn't have children, because you're going to have more financial commitments, more financial obligations around having, you know, a family. Lots of benefits to having a family, lots of benefits to not having one. So, you know, all decisions. So part of the nesting could be children. So you also want to talk about what that might look like. How many children do you want? Raising one child, or do you want a big family, five children? There's very different financial decisions there. Is someone going to stay home? Are we going to have two jobs? If we have two jobs, what is the daycare going to look like, or the childcare going to look like? Where are you going to live? Are there going to be family members around? Are family members willing to help? What does daycare cost? Do you believe in public education, or do you believe in private education? What is that going to look like as far as cost? So you need to, life events, having children can make, it's a big financial decision as well. But let me go back to, you know, coming into a relationship if you have a dual income. If you have been used to working and you've been single, and let's pretend you make $60,000 a year, you're single, you fill out a W-4 at work, you say, I'm single, and, you know, they figure out your withholdings, you go to file your tax return, and it always kind of works out pretty good, and that sounds great. Then you get married, and your spouse makes $100,000, and now you're married, filing joint, you're making $160,000. Your tax situation could change, and you have to be kind of in front of that, and you might need to review how you do your withholdings on your W-4. Your W-4 is what tells the employer what to withhold, and you notify the employer of the that you're married now, and there's dual income, and they can adjust the withholdings. The other thing that you're going to want to pay attention to as well, life event, getting married. What are those fringe benefits I mentioned earlier? Do you still each have to have your own health insurance? You might not think about that, but it could make a difference financially to be both on one plan. I know with my husband and I, his employer required that if health insurance was offered to me, I had to take it. So I had my own health insurance and my husband had his own health insurance. But there are plans where they say, yes, it doesn't matter if your spouse is working, you pick the cheaper plan. And one of my coworkers, in fact, was bouncing between his spouse's plan and his plan when there were periods of time where she wasn't working, you know, having a family. So you can, you know, kind of switch those, and keep in mind that that is considered a life event as well at work. So if you're someone who's working and let's pretend you're married, you have a child now, and you decided you're both going to work and you need dependent care. Well, if your employer offers a flexible spending dependent care account, that's considered a life event, and ordinarily when you can only get into those during annual enrollment, that life event is a trigger for you to be able to get into the plan outside of the open enrollment. And there's a number of benefits that might be available to you because of these triggering life events. So a life event could be a change in the dependent care flexible spending account, the healthcare spending account. It could be for,
health savings account. There was like a change in health insurance. These are all life events that can make a change. And I'm going to throw this in while I'm thinking of it because this is like in the resting stage. I'm going to jump ahead for a minute. When I say life event, another critical life event is when you retire. If you're someone who is 65 and older and going on Medicare, Medicare premiums, there's a standard rate and then there's an income-related monthly adjustment amount, meaning a standard rate for Medicare insurance goes up if your income goes up over certain thresholds, looking back 2 years. They look back 2 years at your income to determine what your current Medicare payment is. Well, if you've retired, that's a life event. You can let Medicare know that you had a life event, and it could be a work reduction, or it can be a work stoppage, or it could be, you know, the loss of a spouse, a loss of a pension. So there are any number of life events that may qualify for you to submit to Medicare / Social Security that you had a life event, and could they please adjust your Medicare premium payment because of that life event? Very, very important to understand. Life events aren't just what I'm talking about on the radio show tonight. Life events are actual get out of jail free cards or go past go cards to help you in some of your financial choices and financial decisions. So changing your W-4, changing, you know, health insurance, changing dependent care contributions to these flexible spending accounts and or dependent care or health care, changes in insurance. If you have a change, like let's pretend you are on insurance and your spouse gets a job that they didn't have before and you can go on their plan. You can change outside of open enrollment for that type of thing. Okay. Another item is you might have, now I'm jumping ahead again to the resting stage, because it part of life changes might also be that one spouse retires and the other one keeps working. So here's a life event that you might have. So I'm skipping ahead a little bit here. Here's a life event that you might have where one spouse is still working, one spouse is retiring, one spouse is younger, one spouse is older. The older spouse could be eligible for Medicare. The younger spouse could be working and still have health care available to them that they're paying for. It could actually be cheaper for your Medicare age spouse to stay on your private health insurance rather than going on Medicare. That could come into play if the working spouse is high income. Because if you remember, pay attention, if you remember, I said that the Medicare premiums are based on your income. So you could actually have an adjusted amount to your Medicare premium that is because of the working spouse. And maybe it's cheaper to stay on the working spouse's health care rather than the Medicare. Because just because the Medicare spouse stopped working and retired, the Medicare premium is not based on that. The Medicare premium is based on the income. So if you retired making $100,000, but your spouse makes $1 million, well, your Medicare premium is going to be through the roof. So maybe your working spouse, who's making $1 million, could cover you on their health insurance. All you have to do is tell Medicare that you have qualified health insurance. Show them that you have qualified health insurance, and you don't have to go on Medicare then, and you can wait until, you know, your spouse stops working. And when your spouse stops working, you would fall off their health insurance. You would go back on, you would go on Medicare, and then you would, you know, sign up a few months beforehand and then let them know that one of the life events was your spouse stopped working. So that work stoppage or work reduction can be either one of you or both of you. Okay. So that was jumping ahead a little bit. So I think we've talked about life events for the testing stage, the nesting stage. And again, I can't cover everything, but I'm just kind of trying to give you glimmers of how you can have very unique circumstances that could be very different than general information that you might get. Because generally, someone might say, if you, you know, listen to podcasts or ChatGPT or, you know, whatever, someone might say, oh, go on Medicare at 65. You have to go on Medicare at 65. Well, that might not be your situation. And you have to be aware that it might not be your situation. You want to be in front of your decisions so that you have the most options and make sure that you understand them. Now, what else in nesting? Oh, so childcare, one of the things you might have to think about too, if you've decided to have a family and decide to have children, is what are you going to do about, you know, assisting with their education? Now, you know, times were different when I was young. I'm one of six kids and we all paid for our own education. I mean, that's just how it was done back then, or at least in my family, that's how it was done. We all paid for our own education. But you might be of a different nature and want to pay for your children's education. Well, the sooner you start saving for that, the better. And how are you going to do that? How does it make sense? Some people just put money in the bank and they say, oh, that's going to be for my kids' education. Might not be the most efficient way to save for education. There are other options. There's the 529 accounts. Most people are familiar with that. So make sure you know what that looks like. Some people think, oh, I'm going to just, you know, I'm going to put it in a minors account, the Uniform Trust for Minors Act, the UTMA accounts. They used to be UGMA accounts. I've seen some people just, you know, think they're doing a great thing by putting money in those accounts. That could be a little bit of a headache, just FYI. And the headache would be, let's think about this for a minute. You've just put money in an account for the child. It's in a custodial account. It's in the child's social security number. And you hope that it makes money. And what happens? It makes money. It makes interest. It makes dividends. Your child now has to file a tax return. So a life event, having a child, now you have all these, you know, kind of saving options for your child. If you put money in a child's custodial account and it earns money and it earns over a certain amount, that child may have to file a tax return. And if that non-earned income, dividends, interest, capital gains, if that non-earned, earned meaning wages, if that non-earned income is over a certain threshold and your child is, you know, under a certain age, they may have to pay a kiddie tax, and the kiddie tax is, in essence, your tax rate. What always cracks me up, and I can't believe it, it doesn't come to the attention of, like, everybody, is that your child has to file a tax return, and there's a form within that tax return that reflects your income, because the kid has to pay taxes based on your income if they're over these certain thresholds, and the returns kind of have to link. So in our software programs, we have to recalculate the parents' return to reflect the kid's income, and we have to recalculate the kid's return to make sure it reflects the parents' income to see what tax rate the kid would pay on that investment income over those certain thresholds. So don't get too fancy with some of this, because, you know, maybe 40 years ago, it was a good idea to kind of shift some of the income tax burden to the kids, but they did away with that with the kiddie tax. And what was more unsettling to me is that if you want to keep your income private from your children, well, I guess they're not signing their tax return then, because your income's sitting right there on that tax form. I don't remember what the number is, but I just find that so unsettling. Just be aware then of paying for education. There's might be better ways. A 529 account, in a lot of states, there's a deduction for that on the tax return, depending on what 529 you use, how much you do, how many kids you have, what kind of income you have. So there could be lots of options on funding education in a smart way. But it's a life event, and you want to make sure that it's in line with, you know, your needs, your goals. You might not want to pay for the whole education for your kid, maybe only part of it. So you really need to understand what that looks like. Folks, we're at the last break. If you have questions, you can send those through yourfinancialchoices.com. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services, including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY 88.1 offers many choices and real voices. Folk music, from folk classics to the Gaelic traditions of the British Isles, to bluegrass and old-time music of Appalachia, to the modern-day singer-songwriters telling the story of today's world. You'll find it all here on WDIY. Listen and enjoy the wide variety of folk music every weekday evening, 7 to 9 p.m., just after NPR News headlines, and Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. on 88.1 WDIY and streaming at WDIY.org.
Welcome back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. We are talking about navigating life events, and basically, I'm just kind of giving you little tidbits of things to watch out for and making sure that you're paying attention to your unique circumstances. Kind of to move forward into these stages of life that I've mentioned, testing, nesting, investing, resting, divesting, investing, what kind of life event might we have there? Well, in investing, I would say the life events you have to kind of pay attention to. In the investing stage, you're kind of through the testing, you're through the nesting, you now maybe have a home, you've maybe paid off most of the mortgage because the mortgage was a 30-year mortgage, and 30 years ago your payment was $1,000 a month, and now maybe you're in year 28 and you're making, you know, three times as much money, but you still only have $1,000 a month going out. I'm making this up. So the investing stage is where all of a sudden you have money accumulating and you're making decisions on where to put it. Life events could be, do we have to earmark certain of the investments for different parts of our life? So we always want to have an emergency reserve. And we have to say, at this point in our life, are we doing renovations on the house? Did we finish the education funding? Are we ready for retirement? Have we done enough for retirement? Have we saved enough for retirement? So now we have life events that kind of inform us with how we should do our investments. I was just talking with someone earlier today about, you know, we talk about diversification in assets that we're investing in, and asset allocation, really important to be diversified because, you know, markets move in cycles. There are certain asset classes that move in favor and out of favor. And when you're diversified, it kind of smooths out volatility that we see in the market when you have kind of broad diversification. And I believe that is true, too, in broadly diversifying the buckets that you can pick from in your savings and or in your spending. So you emergency reserve, maybe you initially started putting all your money into retirement, all your savings went into retirement, and you don't have a lot of money outside of retirement accounts. Remember that retirement accounts are taxed as ordinary income when it comes out, unless you did kind of like after tax or Roth. So what are you doing on your investing, thinking about your life events, you know, what buckets might you have to draw money from in the event you have a purchase or you have an expenditure you hadn't counted on? So think about your investing almost as, you know, kind of managing your life choices, your life options. I like people to have options. So maybe have some in a joint account, or if you're not in a relationship, in an individual account, a brokerage account, where you can tap those investments as you see fit when you need them without strings attached. Whereas a 401k, you might not be able to get the money out without taxes, without 10% penalty if it's an early withdrawal or your employer doesn't allow you to take money out. Maybe a Roth IRA. Love Roth IRAs. You can always get out your original contributions. So, you know, can you tap that? If it's the longer of 5 years and age 59 and a half, you can tap that tax-free. So, you know, kind of diversify your investing. So I'll leave that there for that part of life events. Your investing options are help feeding the life events and the options you have around those life events. Meaning, you know, can you pay cash for the renovation? Do you have to take out a loan for the renovation? Do you take out a line of credit? Do you take out a second mortgage? Do you refi? You know, how are you paying for these things? Oh, wait, I have this bucket I can pull from. and avoid interest charges. Okay, so that's that. Now the resting stage, retirement. What kind of life events do we have? I said the life event could be you get laid off and you had no intention of retiring. Now what are you going to do? What does your job situation look like? Are there other jobs that you can get? You know, do you have a diversified career that you could, you know, bounce to another kind of line of work within still the realm of your skill set? So what are you doing? Or did you just get offered a package and maybe financially you're okay? How do you navigate whether you decide to take that package or not? And that could look different for different people. I've seen people get laid off with no package. I've seen people get laid off or asked to early retire and they give them, you know, a severance. And the severance could be based on how many years you worked at the company or how many vacation days you accumulated or how many sick days you accumulated. So a severance package can look very different for different people. Would you be eligible for unemployment or would you not? So navigating these life events. But the more financially stable you are going into them, the more options you're going to have. For example, my husband was offered an early retirement package. He did take it. This was a long time ago. He took it, and it was like a year pay. How could he resist that? And he then went and got another job. He was fortunate enough and lucky enough that he could get another job. Well, that severance pay kind of bridged him to get the next job, and in fact got the next job sooner than his severance would have taken him for that year. So you want to make sure that you can kind of know how to navigate that and what options, and could you take the option, should you take the option. I had another situation many, many years ago where someone came to me and asked if they should, you know, kind of leave. And I said, you know, the fear is, what if you can't find something else? Because they actually weren't in a position that if they didn't find something else, it would be a good, you know, outcome. And they stayed, and they stayed for X number of years. And then guess what? They did get offered a package X number of years later. That was a pretty good offer, and they took it. And then they went and got another job somewhere else and did very well financially and now could retire early when they were also given a laid off scenario. So kind of being in front of these decisions gives you the options and takes kind of the initial fear or stress out of, you know, the initial like, oh my gosh, they're asking me to leave. And it could be quite stressful. But if you're prepared for it and you planned ahead, or you have some secure, you know, assets outside of just the work, it can make a difference. And then also the life event could be you're laid off pre-age 55 is very different circumstances than 59 and a half. 59 and a half, most of you might know, is the age that you can take money out of retirement accounts without penalty. Still could be income tax, but no penalty at 59 and a half. If you're under 59 and a half, you could have a 10% penalty on an early withdrawal. But life event, what if you're 55 by the end of the year? That is an exception to the early withdrawal penalty of 10%. You have to know what applies to you, which could be very, very different than your neighbor. You might have a 401k that has employer stock in it. Your neighbor might have a 401k with no employer stock. Very different circumstances. Lots of opportunity with employer stock and retirement accounts. I can't tell you that. I mean, it can be a really big tax planning, investment planning opportunity if it has accumulated to some value. I've seen people come with employer stock in a 401k and it's, you know, $10,000 and the cost basis is $10,000. That's not such a great deal. But if someone comes and says, oh, I have $1 million 401k with $250,000 of employer stock with a cost basis of $50,000, lots of tax planning opportunities there. Big life event, big decisions, gives you lots of options, and make sure you know what they are. So I have just a few minutes left. I'm going to talk about, you know, the last stage, the divesting. You know, as we go through life and we are making, we have all of these events, the testing, nesting, investing. As we're going through life, we're accumulating assets. No matter what age we are, we still have to say to ourselves, well, if something happens to me, what is going to happen to these assets? You know, at age 30, someone might have, my son has, you know, a decent amount accumulated in retirement accounts already. So, you know, what's going to happen to that? Who's it going to go to? Well, certainly, you know, back in my day, we always put our parents. And if we weren't married, we'd put our parents. Well, then we get married, you might put your spouse. Well, then you have kids, you might put your spouse and then your kids. Well, maybe you don't have a spouse and maybe you don't have kids, but maybe your parents don't need it. So who would you name? Oh, maybe you have siblings and you'd name your siblings as beneficiaries on those accounts. Well, maybe your siblings don't need it either, but you've got great nieces and nephews and you love them to death. Well, you could name your nieces and nephews. Maybe you don't like anybody in your family or you don't have any siblings. You could name friends, or if you don't, you know, your friends don't need it or you're very charitably inclined, you're philanthropic, you could name charities as beneficiaries. So these are some of the things you want to think about. And as we go through different life events, that could all change. But you kind of plan for, you know, this is the path I'm on today. This is where I'm going. What do I have to plan for? And then you're able to pivot when you have a good understanding of your financial decisions, your financial choices, how it's impacting you without stressing you out. This is why I do this show, by the way. I want to educate people so you're not stressed out by your finances. I get very upset if people are stressed out. I don't want them to be. But it's all in knowing. It's knowledge, right? When we understand where we're going. I'm also all about visualization. So if you don't like the direction it's going, visualize something else, pivot. But you kind of are doing some of this life event planning as we go along. You can change beneficiaries as your circumstances change. And what else did I want to say? Oh, you have to pay attention to survivor benefits. So for example, if you decide to get married or have children and you have a mortgage and you might have kids and you want to pay for their education, but you know, you aren't so many years into your career that you've accumulated enough assets to cover all of that in the event something happens to you, well, then that's where life insurance might come into play. And then what kind of life insurance? Do you get term insurance? Do you get whole life insurance? Whole life costs a lot more. I'm not an insurance agent, by the way. Whole life costs a lot more. Term insurance is cheaper. And maybe over time, you won't need it because you've accumulated enough assets, education accounts, paid off the mortgage. You might not need life insurance forever. Typically, we're getting insurance, any kind of insurance, to cover unforeseen, you know, kind of circumstances, which could be temporary. So understand your beneficiary designations, tax flow, you know, cash flow and that kind of thing, to know what kind of assets will you have at the end of your life. And where do you want them to go and how do they go? So that's where we talk about probate or non-probate. Probate, everything goes through the will because we don't know where it's going to go. If we have asset titling, beneficiary designations, we don't have to look to the will because it might say, you know, to my spouse, to my kids, we know where it goes. That's non-probate. And that could be a very easy way to transfer assets. You want to pay attention to remarriages. What if there's kids from multiple marriages? That's a life event. What does that look like? So I could actually go on and on. It's very big topics, obviously, but it's about raising awareness for you to understand your unique circumstances and that you may not know all of the options that are available to you. Yes, you can do your own research. Yes, you can listen to podcasts. Yes, you can listen to radio shows like this one. But you still may not know all the options that are available to you, and try to make sure you're doing your homework ahead of time. Be proactive, not reactive, as I say at the end of every show. And I will say so now as well. So next week, we are going to do a mid-year tax checkup. So I'm going to talk about tax planning a little bit mid-year to help you kind of get ready for that. I want to thank James for being here. Thank you, listeners. We have Tom Druckenmiller coming up next with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.